What is going on, everyone? It is Tuesday, September 17th. You're listening to another episode of the Boiler Breakdown podcast. I'm your host, co-host, Evan Webb. Tanner's not here today. He is out enjoying the, ungodly hot Arizona weather on vacation. So tonight we have our good pal, Aaron Lynch, hopping on to talk about a game that technically did happen on Saturday. Aaron, thanks for coming on. How you doing, man?
Appreciate being on your show and doing well tonight.
All things considered. I mean, as you can see, if those who are watching by our the title of this podcast, Purdue was just flat out embarrassed, if that's what you want to call it, by Notre Dame on Saturday. A game that saw Purdue not get a first down in the entire first quarter, if I remember correctly. Did not cross the 50 until the second half. A game that saw Purdue, I mean, honestly, probably one of the worst tackling jobs I've ever seen out of a Purdue team, which was very head scratching. A game that kind of had a lot of hype build up to it. Obviously, one, you know, Notre Dame being back in Ross Abe for the first time since 2013. Obviously, they had their letdown game against Northern Illinois the week before. A very talented team still, but, you know, I think Purdue fans and team alike probably were smelling blood in the water, but it was your own blood apparently, because man, they got rocked. Starting out, as overall thoughts, Lynch, from, I know you watched the game, I was in the stands, it was very hot, thankfully. Tanner and I sit on the press box side, so by the time the game started, our seats had just gotten into the shade, so it could have been a lot worse. I can imagine sitting on the east side of the stadium and watching that game in person, because it was miserable on all fronts. I did stay until about 5 minutes left. Tanner left at halftime. Like I said, they were flying out the next day, so they had to get all their stuff, so I don't blame them. But yeah, what are your overall thoughts?
Well, my first thought is, if you stayed at the game and you were on the east side of the field and you weren't a Notre Dame fan, I would not be surprised if you were looking into the sun the whole second half instead of watching on the field. Overall, there's not much to talk about. There's a lack of effort. I mean, worst loss ever in Purdue history, and we're talking worse than Daryl Hazel. The Northern Illinois game 11 years ago, the Wisconsin game 11 years ago, those things rang in my head, but this was worse. That's something. It was very nice on the broadcast of them pay homage and talk about Gary Danielson, because that was literally it. They were running out of things to talk about in the fourth quarter.
I was surprised. I knew, because I was, as the game progressed, I was seeing the tweets of, like, you know, hey, the most points given up in Ross-Ade was 62 by Penn State, which was that 2013 year as well. I did not know this was the worst loss in program history until just like the other day, like probably was Sunday or yesterday when I figured that out. So that was pretty crazy, because that's kind of the reason why I stayed. I was like, well, if they're going to break the record, I might as well see it in person. I saw the other one, so I might as well see this one too. It was just being there, I was dumbfounded, kind of shell-shocked. Obviously Notre Dame got the ball to start the game. Looking back, I wonder, you know, should Purdue have maybe received versus deferring? I don't know if that would have done anything, but you never know. If Purdue had gotten the ball and actually got something going and went down, they kind of fed off the momentum of the crowd, because the crowd was incredible. Notre Dame obviously travels really well, and obviously being an in-state, you know, a lot of in-state fans, they packed Ross-Ade too. But Purdue fans were on another level, and I was wondering, you know, if had Purdue maybe gotten the ball, went down and scored, does that do anything? Obviously we will never know. Once they went down and they scored immediately, it was kind of like, whoa, okay. And then I mean, Tanner said during, he's like, hey, it's exactly what they did in Northern Illinois. Maybe we can, you know, hopefully that's the only thing that they do. And sure enough, Purdue went 3 and out. Notre Dame got the ball back and did the same thing again, and just kind of on repeat. Go ahead.
And I'll say this, Notre Dame did it with their hands tied behind their back, because Riley Leonard can't pass the ball.
No, and that was was so frustrating. So it was like, I mean, going into what we talked about last week, it was like, if we can make Riley Leonard throw the ball, like Purdue has a really good chance to win this game. If we can, you know, sell out on the run, sell out on him, containing him, like make him win the game with his arm, you have a good shot. And then he kind of showed it too. Like when he did have to throw it more than 8 yards, it wasn't a good, or didn't connect. So that was just what was frustrating. It's like, I mean, yeah, but yeah, I was just looking back to the Syracuse game last year, kind of made Riley Leonard look like Lamar Jackson out there. And just what was so fresh to me was just like the poor tackling. Is even like from a guy like Dylan Thienemann, who is, you know, by far our best player on the defensive side, to see him really struggle, one with tackling, but also there's a couple times he just got juked out of his cleats. It was just baffling. Because like even last year when Purdue would get beat, you know, you could tell they were playing hard, competing. But this was just like, I mean, and like after a while, it was kind of like you tell, like they just didn't want to be there, which I don't want to be there either. But
they're paid to be there.
They're paid to be there. Yeah. Yeah.
I think the hardest thing from a Purdue fan, Purdue alumni standpoint is watching this when your coach is and effort. And now and you've said this is a game, this means something. It showed everyone to the world on national television. It really didn't mean that much, or your message didn't get across.
Yeah, and that was, again, that, yeah, it as was frustrating. Leader,
it's you're ill-prepared. Like any, I'm going to compare this to any job. Like if you don't prepare, how can you come out and perform? You had more than enough time to prepare. And I understand that Indiana State is equivalent to maybe a 10A Texas football team.
Yeah.
But
it's being maybe an insult to the 10A Texas football.
I'm just saying, like they want 1-11. They're an FCS school.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is hard to see. And I think Walters and staff have a lot of, I mean, they got a short week. They got to travel out to the West Coast. And, and this is a rubber match game this upcoming week to tell the alumni, the boosters, are you the guy or not?
Yeah.
Because if not, I think Babinski and Chang have a huge question on our hands, because this season can get out of hand with this schedule. And we could be staying down 1-11 again or 2-10.
Yeah, that's what it's. I mean, it's funny too, because like, going into the year, I pick Purdue every time on this podcast when we pick games. But like in my head, I was like, Purdue's probably going to be 1-1 going into the Oregon State game, and look at Purdue's 1-1. But now it's just like, obviously context matters. And it's a very different 1-1 than what I was hoping we'd be feeling. Because in my head, and I talk about this on one of Tanner's other podcasts I filled in for him yesterday. I thought if Purdue was going to get like blown out, I thought it was going to be like a 35-7, 35-10 type game where, again, Notre Dame kind of gets up 10 to 14 points and just kind of salts it away. But they came out. I mean, obviously kudos to them. They could have been a lot worse. They could have easily put up 100 easily by the end of the third quarter, probably. So I love Marcus Freeman. I mean, kudos to him for being merciful against his former employer. But yeah, that was the kind of going back to what you said earlier, like, because going into the game, I was loving what Walters was saying about like how like this game, you know, it means something. He's had it circled, because it kind of shows, because a lot of times you hear coaches speak of like, you know, hey, you obviously, yes, you know, they're a great opponent, but you know, it's just another game. But like, you know, Notre Dame's different for playing when Purdue plays Notre Dame. It's a different game. Especially for the fans, which kind of showed like, okay, he gets it. Like, and you can even probably argue that, you know, they've probably been prepping for this game for months, because I mean, how much prep do you think they really had to do for Indiana State? Like, in all honesty, like not a whole lot.
You run vanilla offense, you're looking for execution.
Yeah. And which is exactly what they did too. Like, I mean, like after the Indiana State game, it was, you know, yes, you did what you're supposed to do, but also like you look good doing it. Offense executed, defense did really well. So I was feeling good. I thought, you know, like we said, like if Notre Dame can, if Purdue can force Notre Dame to throw, I liked our chances, you know, assuming we could move the ball too and can do either. So that was kind of the most disheartening thing was like during the game, I was like, man, it kind of felt, I don't like making comparisons to Hazel just yet, which obviously we'll get into that here in a little bit, but like it felt a lot. It reminded me so much of the all eggs in one basket before the Marshall game in 2015. And then we come out and throw a pick, like with pick six first play of the game. So I was just like, man, like talk about just putting your foot in your mouth. And like, it was like, I left again with 5 minutes to go and was just praying I didn't hear Notre Dame score again on the way out. But I was able to listen to Walter's post game, like right after the game on the radio. You just tell, he just felt like he just sounded shell shocked of like, what the hell just happened? I listened to his presser yesterday. I liked what he had to say. But again, it's like, like you said, this is obviously it was going to be a pivotal game anyways, because this Oregon State game is definitely one of those where if Purdue before the season was like, okay, if Purdue wants to have a bowl type season, this is a must win game on that aspect. But now it's like, screw the bowl at this point. It's just like, you need to show that what happened on Saturday was an anomaly. And you're more like the team that played, Indiana State in terms of your execution, attention to detail. Because what we saw on Saturday, like you said, if that's the team that we have, this season's going to go off the rails, no pun intended, by the end of September. Like, I mean, when you got Nebraska, who's looking really, really good coming into town on homecoming, like that could be ugly fast. Because again, like, I mean, in Notre Dame, like, I mean, the scary thing is like Notre Dame's probably the best team Purdue's going to play this year. I mean, probably that's probably the best secondary we're going to face.
Easily best secondary, but it's not going to be the best athletes.
No, exactly. I mean, when you think about Oregon at Ohio State, I mean, Penn State. I mean, even Nebraska, they're getting dudes. They've always gotten dudes. It's just now they have a competent coach. It's a little daunting. It was really tough to watch. Walter said, nothing was positive outside of the punter. He looked good.
Helmet sticker to Crimmins.
Yeah. The only helmet sticker awarded because he averaged like 47 yards a punt.
48. 48 if you round up.
Okay, 48. He had one that he almost stuck in the five, but it ended up rolling into the end zone. But I mean, when you look at Riley Leonard, for example, again on the ground,
ran still has 11 a passing touchdown. Can't believe it.
Yeah. They finally did throw the passing touchdown. It was just their backup.
Angeli, I think is a better quarterback at this
point. Yeah. Because I forgot. I realized they put him in because he threw the ball. And I was like, dang, that was a good throw from Leonard. And I was like, oh, wait, this is the backup.
Yeah, it was Angeli, because I was wondering if they were going to put Carr in. And when they did, I was like, oh, this is bad when you go three default quarterbacks.
Yeah. I mean, Riley Leonard went 11 for 16 for 112 yards. Didn't throw a touchdown. Didn't have to. He went... rushed 11 times for 100 yards, 3 touchdowns. The one obviously was the highlight where he kind of broke a bunch of tackles a la Rondale Moore, which I guess is, and now Purdue fans know what Ohio State fans felt like in that one play. Jeremiah Love, 10 rushes for 109 yards, averaging 10.9 yards a carry, a touchdown. Jadarian Price, 8 for 86. Like, you had two guys rush averaging over 10 yards a carry, and the other one had 9, and that was the quarterback. Like, it was just looking more look at it, the more it's just like, I cannot believe how bad that was. I mean, the receiver, their leading receiver had 2 receptions for 47 yards. And if you had told me that going to the game that Purdue held their top receiver to 2 for 47 yards, that would have felt pretty good. Hopefully, I don't know.
No, I don't know. It would made me think that we couldn't have stopped the run if they're not.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, looking at the game, I mean, I remember thinking in the second quarter, I was like, okay, Purdue got down 28-0 with 2 minutes and 10 seconds left. I was like, okay, we're down 4 scores, but if we can, we're going to get the ball back. If we can do something with it, score by the end of the half, you get the ball after halftime. If you can score then, like, you're still down 14, but at least, like, it's doable. It's going to be an uphill battle, but at least it's like you're not down 28. And then Carr immediately throws that pick six, which at the time, well, it's actually funny. It's funny now. It wasn't funny at the time, but like before that series, I was looking at Twitter because it was more entertaining than the game. And I saw someone post like, this feels like a time where Purdue throws a pick six trying to force something because they have to. And sure enough, like a play or two later, it's exactly what happened. And when it happened, I thought that Card got, cause he got hit. I thought like the ball just popped up and it was just like, oh, that's bad break. And then I saw the replay. I was like, oh, he shoveled it with his left hand, which is what I saw the Titans do.
Carson Wentz and Will Levis.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that was, I saw all of Will Levis against the Bears, the weekend before. And then Notre Dame gets the ball back after going three and out and trying to run down the clock, bust an 80-yard or a 70-yard run, that was officially, it was like, this is unbearable. Did you watch the whole game on TV?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, kudos to you. Yeah, I don't know. I don't even know what to say about this game anymore. Like, there's not a whole lot to say.
Well,
Card finished 11 for 24, 124 yards, one touchdown, two interceptions. Leading rusher was Reggie Love, 10 for 61. Cam Brown, leading receiver, with one reception for 52 yards. It was, I think, a busted play.
Yeah, it was a busted play. He tripped up.
Yeah.
That's exactly what happened.
Yeah. Because even when he caught it, I was like, man, if we don't score on that, I'm not sure we're going to. At least we got past the 50 then. Yeah, it was just, I think Thielemann was credited with four missed tackles, but it felt like way more. I'm not sure if those count, like when he just like didn't touch the guy because he got faked out so badly. Another telling point was the first drive of the game, when Love busted that, that first run, Kydren Jenkins took a horrible angle and just looked like he was running in sand trying to catch him. Like it was, I couldn't believe how slow he and the rest of the defense, frankly, just looked. It was wild. I don't know.
There's many things that we can look at and as a fan think about. All it comes down to is the coaches didn't do their job to get the guys ready. They didn't execute on a game plan. I'll say the jury's out if Graham Harrell can call offense.
That was probably my – because going into the game again, like we didn't see much in the NCAA game, which I was like, okay, like, you know, we saw it with Tiller. We're like, you know, when we played Notre Dame every year, it was like, you know, you the first two games, like, yeah, you run, you show some stuff, but not a whole lot. And then you kind of unleash it against Notre Dame. I was thinking that he might do the same thing of like, hey, like, you know, we'll show some things, make them think about, you know, certain schemes and whatnot. And then, you know, when Notre Dame comes, we can just kind of unleash this offense that we've heard all offseason that, you know, better receivers now. Edrin is he's a dude, like he's huge, physical. We still haven't seen obviously CJ Smith and his speed, and probably won't for at least another week. But I was like, man, it'd be exciting to see like these receivers and like all the hype against this obviously elite secondary. And the play calling was just, it was, and I don't know, part of it was, I mean, obviously the offensive line just got absolutely obliterated. Which again was a disappointment because again all offseason we heard how much better this offensive line looked, how much deeper they were, and how much bigger they were, and still it was just like they just got absolutely manhandled. Card was running for his life, and I don't know if it was the plays were just developing too slow because the receivers couldn't get anywhere or what, but yeah, I was just really disappointed in the play calling.
There's a few things that I'm going to say here. The offensive lineman things, because I haven't been on the podcast for a while, so when they, I remember Tanner saying like, oh, look at, you know, because I'm huge on the offensive line because that's the only way I feel like we're going to succeed is we have good offensive line play, because we've always lacked in defense outside a couple years in this millennium. I'll say that the guys that he took chances on were high risk and could not pan out either. And I understand you have to take what you can get, especially because, you know, our NIL isn't what other NILs is. But the thing is, as a coach, you need to play to your player's skill set. Mm-hmm. I have not seen him move the pocket for Carson for Card. And that's what blows my mind. We could have had Deion Burks. We could have Scorton still here. We would have still got blown out. There, even with C.J. Smith, if he was in, I don't think it would have been made a difference because you're still making Card play like he's a statue. And you could easily move the pocket and do some things. And that's, I'm not going to look back and say, you know, Brom was great, but Brom was innovative in that and played to his strengths. And I don't, and this is Graham Harrell's third stop in regards to, it didn't pan out at USC. It didn't pan out West Virginia. I mean, if the proof's in the pudding and that's what Freeman and staff was looking at with him and saying he was going to be predictable. I mean, look what he's done at other stops. You know, that's kind of where we stand. It is the player's job to get up and play on and provide an effort, but you can only provide an effort if you're not outmanned. Mm-hmm. And they looked outmanned at times.
Yeah.
Sometimes it was effort, but that if the scheme ain't right, you can only effort so much to your God-given abilities. I understand these are all D1, but that's an upper echelon program. Unfortunately, boys, you're going to be playing some better athletes than there in the upcoming schedule.
Yeah. The scheme is what's so frustrating. It does kind of remind me again of like, like Hazel trying to run.
It reminds me of Shoop.
Yeah. Or Hazel like trying to like mimic the Ohio State method without Ohio State type players. Obviously he learned under Tressel, you know, he tried to bring that Ohio State, you know, way of thinking, but it's like, it doesn't work at Purdue. Cause like, again, it's like, if the guys are going to go to Ohio State, they're probably going to go to Ohio State. It's just the unfortunate part. I mean, you get a couple guys here and there, but, and they're a juggernaut and they always will be. The offensive. Yeah. I feel like there was one time we did get like one like tight end screen that worked well. Then we never saw it again. Just like,
I thought Claire had some flags though on him.
He had a couple. Yeah. But there was like, I feel like there was like one like play that actually seemed to work for like a first down in the second half. And then we just didn't do it again ever. as we got a comment here on YouTube, Doug and Angelotta, brutal game in all aspects. Yeah. There was, like I said, could not walk away from that game positive about literally anything other than the fact that it wasn't raining.
The only thing I could think of was the Wisconsin game where Monte Ball ran all over that Purdue defense. That was the closest thing that was in my head thinking about that game.
Yeah. And I was trying to, the last couple of days, I've tried to like, because the feeling I had at that game, it was obviously not a fun one, but it was different than other losses. And I was trying to figure out how, like, what it felt like. The closest thing I could equate it to, which I still don't think it's even on par with that, was the FDU loss in basketball, just because, again, it was just like, just so dumbfounded. But obviously FDU loss is way worse given just the magnitude and the fact that it was like, that was the end of Purdue season. It was second time in history type thing. Whereas this is like Purdue still has 10 more games. It doesn't. It shouldn't define the season. Hopefully it doesn't. If it does, then that's not good. But it was just like, I couldn't, you know, like maybe the Hazel, some of those Hazel games. Yeah. But also, maybe I'm just jaded now, or just like, I'm just so numb to that point, which sucks as when we were in school. I feel like I'm so numb to those. Like, I kind of forget what those felt like. But it really sucked.
We were there during the lows of the lows on both sides.
We were. Yeah, we were. It was a great time.
I'm going to play devil's advocate here. Freeman, Bobinski and Chang have some thoughts to do. Freeman answered the call in regards to his naysayers. They have Miami, Ohio this week. If Walters and staff and company don't do it, does Bobinski have remorse giving a guy that had little to no experience coaching, very little, compared to the other guy that was in the running of Troy Calhoun?
I don't think if he gets it, I don't think he gets it this week. I think it'd be more of like if Purdue ends up going 2-10, I think anything less than 4-8, you could argue, yeah, does Babinski kind of have, you know, buyer's remorse sort of thing? And I also just think it depends just on how they happen to. If Purdue, you know, for the rest of the year is super, like, is, you know, plays their butts off, is competitive in games, but just comes up short, I think it's one thing. But if we see a lot of like what we saw on Saturday, even to like our peer programs, like a Minnesota, which we don't play Minnesota this year, do we? No, but like to like an Illinois, to a Michigan State, to an Indiana, if these types of results happen in those games, then it's like we got to figure something out quickly, because it's because that's not good, especially in today's day and age with transfers. It could spiral really fast. And so, but yeah, I'm not, yeah, I don't know. Like, and I think if anything, like, I think we would see obviously changes at coordinator, which I don't know. I know at the end of the last year, Walters ended up calling the defense, which the defense ended up looking better at the end of last year. Mm-hmm. Have they said if he's calling it this year, or is it Kane now? I know Kane's up in the box.
I thought duties went back to Kane this year.
That's why, because that's what I'm like wondering, is like, man, is it just like, because the defense again kind of looks like how it did last year, where the quarterback is just able to run all over us, which is really frustrating. It's like, the defense did look kind of better towards the end of last year after Walters took over. It's like, man, is it like, do we just need just new coordinators? But then it's like, that's also the question of like,
did Walters hire the right guys?
Right. Yeah. Which, and that's, I think also kind of shows if, again, just doing this whole like doomsday, if Purdue ends up going, you know, less than 4-8 this year and doesn't look good doing it, and Walters makes no changes, then that's, I mean, it's, maybe start raising some alarms, because I think that part of being a head coach is admitting when you screwed up, which he's able to do post game, but like, can you do it when it's the guys that you hired?
Hazel was able to do it post game too.
Yeah. He watched a lot of tape. He watched a lot of tape.
That film room.
Not sure what tape. Not sure what tape. But he watched tape.
I have to sit here and here's what I'm going to say. You pay for experience. Mm-hmm. I understand kind of where this was, that upcoming coordinator that's looking real good, high risk, high reward with him.
Yeah.
And I totally understand that. And I'm not Bobinski. I'm not. But, you know, who thought this guy's scheme, he had similar characteristics, probably that of Jeff Brohm, mm-hmm. in regards to innovation, mm-hmm. but just on the different side of the ball.
Yep.
What's going to be the big determiner is, how are you going to adjust and react? And the only thing I thought with Calhoun, and I was actually on the fence, I actually wanted Calhoun, was this guy's had to, he's been in Air Force since 2007. You're not getting the primetime recruits at Air Force. Right. And you've had to reinvent, and he's won 10 games, and he's had to do, it's kind of like what Painter did. Yeah. And I'm hoping, I hope things work out for this staff, but this staff has to take a quick, hard look at themselves and look at this team and say, A, let's not lose the locker room like Mr. Grafal in Chicago did. But let's adjust and let's reset expectations and also look for our strengths and not try to, I don't even want to say shell shock, not getting ourselves in a shell shock, because we understood what the assignment was this week. And that was to play our brand of football and make the team adjust to us. And then we make adjustments in the second half to then close the game out.
Yeah. I feel team, like, when, like, sorry, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, this team has more talent than Hazel's team. There's no
doubt. Oh yeah. Yeah. And I think even with the talent we have now, it's still a, like, when you play the Notre Dames, even if Notre Dame lost to a MAC school, when you play the Ohio States, when you play the Oregons, like, you can't play straight up with them. You have to be different somehow. Like, again, we saw with Brohm, you just got to be weird with it. Like, you got to, like I said, kind of get them on their heels, make them think. Because if you just try and, you know, play their brand of football, it's, It's like we saw it with, you know, flip side in basketball when teams tried to go at Edie one on one, like it was over. Like, oh, yep. I mean, thank you, Izzo, for doing it, a bunch, because it was fun to watch Edie put up 40 against Michigan State. But yeah, it's kind of the same thing, just on the flip side. It's like if you try and play smash mouth football with some of these schools, like they're just gonna punch you right in the face because they just have. I mean, especially with football, it's like size does matter a lot.
It does, but the thing is, we have a quarterback that can move the pocket.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Let's play that strength. Let's get the receivers that also have speed and they can get out, and they have size too.
Yeah.
And we have a very good tight end. Let's just get this line to move the pocket.
Yeah. And that's what's also frustrating too, is like I was really hoping this was going to be kind of Hudson Card's coming out party, because, I mean, obviously he came into Purdue pretty hyped up, obviously being a 4-star recruit, played at Texas. The ability's there. I think he's got an NFL body. I think he's got an NFL arm. I think he's got the ability, but he has not shown it yet. I was really hoping that, you know, against Notre Dame, you know, on CBS, that type of thing, like, be a perfect time for him to, you know, maybe get that game winning drive late in the game to kind of put Purdue over the top, to kind of show us what he's got. And part of it, I don't know if it was him taking too long, but again, like when he's running for his life, I'm not sure who, you know, I'm sure a lot of blame to throw on the offensive side, but I just really want to see the Hudson Card that we've been hoping for, because we saw glimpses of it last year against Minnesota, against Indiana, but we haven't seen it for multiple stretches.
No, and the consistency, and I think it goes back to play calling. Play your guys' strengths.
Yeah.
And I mean, if anyone, it's the whole coaching staff of Graham Harrell. This is your third gig.
Yeah.
I mean, if you've been found out, I mean, then there's got to be decisions in this offseason overall, because you are correct. I thought that looking at the schedule, 4-8 was probably going to be it. After Saturday, I'm not playing hitting the doomsday button, but going to Corvallis, this is now, I can't remember a more decisive, like, must-win game.
Yeah. With this type of magnitude, I mean, there's obviously there's been games where, like, I can think back to 2017, going into Iowa, where it was like, you know, if Purdue wants to make a bowl game, they got to beat Iowa and they got to beat Indiana. But it wasn't like but it was like, so when they won, it was like, oh, this is awesome. Like, I was not expecting, you know, correct, a bowl game. The game's already been fun. Season's already been fun. You know, going from what we had with Hazel to, you know, even if we had a 5-win year that would have been a fun, you know, because we saw some fun football. But like this magnitude,
this is culture. This is program. Yeah, this is deeper than, hey, we're setting the stones of the foundation in 2017 of where we're going to be. This is, are people going to want to be a part of Purdue brand football?
Yeah. If you go out to Corvallis and I don't think even if they lost, I don't think it'd be as bad, but if you lose the way you lost on Saturday, where you're just not competitive, or just again, kind of show some of the, like, you're just like, so you're lost out there, that crowd on homecoming is probably gonna be pretty sparse, not Hazel sparse, but like those Nebraska fans are going to eat up a lot of those tickets that people are going to sell, because I mean, in 2024, there's a lot of stuff to do outside of going to games. I mean, I love going to games. I'm like, can you go to games? But for kind of the average fan, like, it's, you know, choices can be made. And if you can sell a ticket, there'll be a Nebraska fan that'll buy that ticket in a heartbeat. But yeah, I think you're right. Yeah. This game, it's such a pit, which is crazy. I think the third game of the year is in such a pivotal spot. And year two, of a regime. Yeah. But that's also just kind of the nature of college athletics today, where you can turn things around pretty quickly. You can buy the players you want. But yeah, it's, I still believe in this roster or this coaching staff, at least the head coach for sure. I think, going back to what you're saying, like, I think this is it was definitely a high upside type of decision to hire Walters. It wasn't going to be like an instant success right away, I don't think, just because of the fact that he was so inexperienced. But I think if it works out, it's going to work really well. It's just a matter of, does Can Walters make the right decisions via, you know, coaching decisions, but also just his, you know, staff decisions? And then does the athletic department, do the fans have the patience to go through the growing pains, which I think they do. I mean, we saw it again with Brohm, which I don't like comparing coaches, because, like, obviously Brohm left. He wanted to leave, which sucks. It hurt. But
Brohm also didn't run a disciplined program. Brohm's teams also
did
penalties that lost us games.
Yep, multiple times. Yep. We might go 6-6, but it would be a pretty fun 6-6 more than likely. Like, it was, I mean, yeah, there was all, but there's also, you know, on the flip side too, I think people forget too, we had a lot of frustrating losses too under Brohm, like Eastern Michigan getting beat by a bad Rutgers team, out in Piscataway. Obviously people remember the Ohio States, the Iowas, the Michigan States games, the Music City Bowl. Those are all great.
The 2020 Rutgers game is the worst. That's still.
I don't even remember. I just remember it was 2016 or 2017 where we should have beat them, but we didn't. It was like 18-16 or something stupid like that out there. And also, obviously we look back on the Brohm regime, with high regard, but he was 500 at Purdue, which is crazy thing about, because you think he did so well, because obviously he
pulled the program out of a dumpster.
He did, yeah, he did. But that's kind of, I think, all we're asking for with Walters, especially now with, given the way the Big Ten is and college football. Like, you know, my dream was always for Purdue to at least win 10 games. We've won it once in our program history. Now it's just like, we can make a bowl. Like, I'll be happy if we can, you know, have fun doing it. You know, maybe on a good year, good schedule, maybe, you know, flirt with, you know, trying to get one of those outside spots in the playoff. But that's a pretty high bar. But at this point, I'm just like, if we're competitive and it's a fun brand of football, like, I'm in. But what we saw on Saturday was not that.
I don't think it's a high bar. I think it's just going to take the right group of guys.
Yep.
Right coaching staff. And also, it's just right timing. I think in the Big Ten right now, if you lose three games, you have an outside shot at the playoffs.
Yeah.
Just like an SEC.
Yeah. You need a year where, like, yeah, maybe you can avoid Ohio State, Oregon, and then maybe you catch Michigan or USC on a down year.
I also think Nebraska's back. That's the problem.
That's it. But we can kind of move on. But yeah, this game of Corvallis, as we kind of already said, both teams coming off just absolute beatdowns by their in-state rival, looking to prove something. We just kind of saw a Pac-2 team beat a Big Ten team with Wazoo beating Washington. And you know that these two teams are definitely have a huge chip on their shoulder from being left in the dust by the rest of the Pac-12 for leaving for what they think is greener grass. We'll see. I think Washington and UCLA are going to have a rude awakening in this new Big Ten in football and basketball. They've got a quarterback who likes to run, and they have a good running game. So that makes me nervous. What are your thoughts going into this game?
I'm glad that Martinez is not there anymore. Running back from last year, because we would have been ran all over. I'll say, with Smith going to MSU, this game is a little more palatable than when I was watching last year. I think this is a hard place to go out and play, especially if it rains. In the Northwest, I think this is one of the most interesting stadiums actually in college football.
I was listening to Golden Blacks, and they talked about how they're expecting a sellout. It only holds like 35,000, but it's going to be kind of like a soccer type stadium.
It is soccer type stadium, and they run chainsaws.
That's awesome. I don't even know where Corvallis is in the state of Oregon.
I believe it's in the eastern part of Oregon.
Okay.
You can look up and verify me, but Oregon is 5.5-point favorites. Where the line is now.
It's west. It's west. It is.
I thought it was east with the mountains.
Nope. It is not that far from Eugene, actually. It doesn't look like. This is a different list. I'm spelling Corvallis wrong. It's in a different spot.
Probably not. This...
Trying to find their stadium, but found a Home Depot.
Well, while you're
looking... Oregon State. I found it. Yeah, I found it.
While you're looking at that,
ooh, that is a cool state. I like that stadium.
It's neat. I've watched too many Pac-12 games at dark, and that stadium is, I think, one of the coolest in the Pac-12.
Okay, cool.
Sorry, Oregon State is 4.5 right now. It opened at 5.5. 50.5 is total points. I haven't watched Oregon State in the first three games, so I don't know. I didn't watch them much against Oregon on Saturday. Probably should have flipped over and watched. They had a more competitive game against Oregon than what we did against Notre Dame, but
yeah.
I think this is a game that this isn't one you really want after a game what we just had.
Yeah.
And for Oregon State, this is perfect. You know, we're coming in, they're probably thinking, licking their wounds, they're probably watching tape. Where to expose this, especially if our coaching staff does not adjust.
Yeah.
I think this is going to be a physical matchup up front. And if the defense and the offense doesn't respond, I think they're in for a long, long night in Corvallis.
Yeah. Yeah. Before we pick that, we'll pick some games. Actually, before we do that, though, and I meant to do this at the top of the show, and I screwed up. We want to thank some of our sponsors. One of our favorite sponsors, they've been with us since the beginning, Mad Mushroom Pizza. You know, they've home the original cheese stick, multiple locations. But next time you're in, whenever we like to go, whenever I'm in Kansas, I try and make it there as often as I can. Big cheese stick guy. They have their pizza of the month, which let me pull it up here, which for September is the Carl's Spicy Barbecue Chicken. It's our house blend spicy barbecue sauce topped with chicken, cup and char pepperoni, onions, mozzarella, and cheddar cheese, starting at $14. But if you're going there, make sure that you tell them Boiler Breakdown sent you. And if you're ordering online, use promo code BREAK5 for $5 off any order over $20. Mad Mushroom, feed your head. Cheesecake sounded really good. I didn't really have dinner before this, and I am feeling it.
I wish you had these promo codes when we were in school.
I know, right? Oops, I forgot to... Now I'm losing all my stuff here. There we go. Oop, not that one.
Any students listening to this podcast, these are gold.
Yeah.
Keep these promo codes.
Yeah. Let me get this off here because I am tanning out here and these things just go to hell. Whoops. Need to change that one too. We can pick some games here around the Big Ten. Let me pull up the schedule here. My Wi-Fi has been crap this week. Friday night's big game, a ranked game.
This is a big game.
Yeah, you've got number 24 Fighting Illini, 3-0 at number 22 Nebraska. Nebraska 7.5-point favorite. This is 8:00 Eastern on Fox Friday night. Hell of a game for Friday night.
Fox has had two great back-to-back Friday night games.
Game. Yeah,
I can't deny that. I think this is actually a very interesting matchup. Two programs heading on the up again, with Rule definitely having Pryor as his quarterback, who Patrick Mahomes Jr. Also having the dudes defensively and how they finished out the season. I think Illinois is still on the right track. I just don't know if they're going to have the guys to play this game for four quarters.
Yeah.
Give me Nebraska.
It's going into the year, our good pal who claims he's not an Illinois football fan, but yet knows a lot about him. And I think he said that that Illinois going into the year, the defense had a lot of question marks. People thought that their offense was going to be really good, but the defense might not be able to stop anybody. But so far, granted, they haven't played. They did play Kansas, who was ranked, but Kansas has also lost back-to-back games. I don't think the Kansas is that great. Illinois is averaging only 9 points a game given up on defense. So it'll be interesting. But yeah, I do think that place is going to be absolutely rocking.
It is every game.
It is every game, yes. But the fact you got two ranked teams coming in, I'll take Nebraska. And I think they win by two touchdowns.
And before we move on to the next game, our friend needs to understand, like, when you lose back-to-back first-round picks off your defense, yeah, your defense is going to struggle.
Yeah. Yep. This one will be a blowout. Marshall at number three, Ohio State. Ohio State favored by 40.5 with the spread at 51.5. So they're anticipating essentially a shutout.
I'm blown away this is the big noon game.
I don't know. I don't know if I like this whole big noon thing. I think it's going to take away some really awesome opportunities for night games.
The jury's still out, but I believe that the big noon should be, I think with now CBS getting the middle, like the afternoon matinee game, I think that's going to take away more from your night games than.
Yeah.
Ohio State. Large.
Do you think they cover the 40.5?
That's hard. I'm going to say maybe because they're going to put Brown in there, their backup QB, and he's going to want to show like he should be starting over Howard.
Yeah. I think they cover that. Noon on Big Ten Network. This game just pisses me off. Charlotte travels down to Bloomington to face the 3-0 Hoosiers. Hoosiers 20.5 points favorites.
Coach Sick. He's the real deal. And I know this is forbidden to say on this podcast, but they got themselves a coach, and it's got me concerned.
Yeah. I mean, part of it, I'm just like, I mean, they've played nobody, but they've looked good doing it. So there's that. And I'm not going to criticize anyone for scheduling wins, especially in today's day and age of college football. But there's a high probability that they start out 6-0 going into that game against Nebraska, which will be probably two ranked teams. It'll be two ranked teams.
It probably will be. And I will say this, as much as we don't care for them, his halftime interview against UCLA this past Saturday, I mean, I would have ran through the wall for that guy.
I didn't see it.
I mean, if he had a dart stick in his mouth too, it'd just make it all better.
yeah, Charlotte's terrible. I think Indiana wins. I think they cover that because yeah, Charlotte beat Gardner Webb by one, which I did not know Gardner Webb had a football team.
didn't know that either. Yeah. I heard you and on the other podcast talking about that. Yeah, I'll say India by 30, and they cover that.
Yeah. Another team I kind of forgot they had a football team. Villanova travels to 3-0. Villanova travels to 2-1 Maryland. Noon again on Big Ten Network. Not even a line on this game.
Give me Maryland.
Yeah, large. A team close to your heart for reasons, for video game reasons. The Kent State Flashes travel to number 10 Penn State. 3:30 Eastern Big Ten Network. Penn State's favored by 48.5. Over-under is 56.5.
No, Penn State's 48.5 they're favored by.
That's what I said.
You said 40.5.
Oh, I thought I said 40.5. My bad. I'll blame audio.
Okay. 48.5.
Yeah.
Yes, this team is near and dear. Too bad that I'm not – Darryl's ain't calling plays this weekend.
Yeah.
Penn State large.
Yeah, Kent State's 0-3. They've lost to credit to them. They're cashing those checks. They've got blanked 71-0 at Tennessee this last weekend. I've lost to St. Francis, PA.
And Pitt.
Yeah, Penn State wins by 55.
Yep.
3:30 CBS game. I'm not sure why this team is still ranked. You got number 11 USC at number 18 Michigan.
Come on, pass laurels here. I'm actually happy. This game actually interests me this weekend. This is a hey, Sherrone Moore, you're starting Alex Orji now.
Yeah, that's true.
We haven't seen really Orji pass the ball. Are you going to be dominant and physical, or what's your identity as the coach in this team?
Yeah.
On the flip side, Lincoln Riley with Miller Moss has looked good. They looked very good against LSU. This is the first time, I think, since 1980 that they've played each other.
Too. Really?
It's been a long – it's not – they've never played each other in our lifetime, I believe.
That's crazy, especially, like, given, like, just, like, the Rose Bowl. Like,
that's the last time they played each other.
That's wild.
They have not played each other a lot. And that's why this matchup intrigues me, USC going to the Big House with Miller Moss. I think this is a statement game for USC and Lincoln Riley.
Yep.
Even the fight on Trojans.
Yeah, they're 6-point favorites. I forgot that Michigan was starting a new quarterback. I'll take USC in a close one. I'm going to say they don't cover because I'm going to say it's like a 3-4 point game. If USC can win this one, it's kind of like a, you know, hey, we're here in the Big Ten now. I think definitely kind of they last couple seasons, they've kind of haven't been taken seriously because they just don't have a defense. But I think, USC gets it done. Other 3:30 game on ABC.
Oh, before we move off, I want to have a mea culpa. They played in the 2007 Rose Bowl. I forgot.
Okay. Still, but, though, it's 17 years. That's crazy.
So, yes, 2007 Rose Bowl. Yep, 18 years.
Wow. That's wild. 3:30 game on ABC. UCLA, after getting drubbed by Indiana, travels to Death Valley in LSU. LSU favored by 24. Give me LSU by 35 plus.
I can't do the Go Tigers, but Go Tigers.
East Coast battle. You got Rutgers at 3:30 Eastern again. Rutgers traveling to Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech favored by 3.5.
Give me Greg Schiano on the Rutgers Knights. I think they go in and get a win here and set themselves up for conference play.
I think I picked Virginia Tech on the other podcast. So I'll do the same thing, just different from you. I'll take Virginia Tech on close one. Yeah, Schiano, I mean, has them respectable. I think they can – now there's no Big Ten East. I think they can probably make a little bit more noise.
Yep.
God, a game I will definitely not be watching. 7 o'clock on Fox Sports 1. Northwestern travels out west to Washington. Washington's a 10.5 point favorite.
Battle of the cats and dogs. I think Washington's going to come and make a statement here.
Mm-hmm. After getting beat by Wazoo.
Yep, in the Apple Cup. Give me the Huskies.
I wouldn't even watch this basketball game. Let alone a football game. give me Washington to cover. I think as of right now, based off of performance we've seen so far, I think you could probably throw Northwestern, UCLA,
us,
and Washington probably is your bottom four Big Ten teams right now.
I would reorder UCLA. I'd say Northwestern's above.
I didn't put them in order. I said like just in the bottom four. Like yeah.
In the quartile, the worst four. Yes.
Yeah. 100%. As of right now, yes. Based off of what we've seen, yes. Saturday, 7:30 NBC. I think it should be a sneaky good game. Iowa travels up to Minnesota, or I guess over to Minnesota, geographically. Face the Gophers. Iowa 2.5 point favorite.
With a point total of 35.5 for this.
Punting is winning.
You're right. This is going to be a sneaky good game.
Yeah.
I really want to say Fleck is probably, this is more of a game he needs to win. Especially
yes,
looking. Give me Row the Boat here.
Okay. Quite literally the match, ESPN matchup predictor is split at 50. Not like 50.1 versus 49. It's 50 straight. 50. give me the Hawkeyes. They've shown they can score the ball. Whether they do or not is a different story. But yeah, give me the Hawkeyes to cover that 2.5, but barely. Michigan State travels out to Boston College, who was ranked. Obviously, they played a really good game over the weekend. Just came up short. This is at 8 o'clock on the ACC network.
I wish this
Billy Bryan and the boys.
I wish this was an actual earlier game.
Yeah,
I think John Smith goes out there and takes the Billy O.
Really? Boston College is 6.5-point favorite. Okay.
I believe Florida State is that bad of a team that win does not look good anymore. And Jonathan Smith sets the tone running that pro style offense, two tight ends, and runs the ball. And I will let you know, I don't know how we're going to stop it when we play them earlier this year. Later this year, sorry.
Yeah. I'll take Boston College again to be different. I like what Bill O'Brien's done so far. I was telling Tanner this the other day. I saw on Twitter, but it was like one of those promos or things they shot during Big Ten Media Day where like they asked the coach, and it was like they asked every coach who is the best current NFL player that they've coached in college. And Michigan State's coach came up, and I was like, who the hell is that guy? And I had no idea who he was. Until they showed his dad, I didn't know who Michigan State's coach was or what he looked like.
He's the only coach to make DJU look decent.
Yikes. And finally, the game we're all wanting to watch, maybe, on the CW. So check your local listings. Make sure you got the CW. Check your streaming platform. Make sure you have the CW network.
If not, you can download the CW app. It will be there.
Okay. 8:30 Eastern, 7:30 Central. Our Boilermakers travel out to Corvallis to take on the Oregon State Beavers. As of right now, Oregon State's 4.5-point favorite. Give me score prediction, as you always do, score prediction, player of the game, and your spiciest take.
Score prediction. I'm going to say 28-10 Oregon State.
Oh my god.
Player of the game is going to be probably a corner or their running back. What was the other thing?
Spiciest take. Or just a spicy take. Usually it's like
Graham Harrell will be on the hot seat to be fine.
Our loyal listener Cameron Day, which Lynch Cameron went to school when we were there. Make a nice comment. We suck. Bring back Danny Hope. I would love to see Danny Hope's mustache and flow on the sideline again. And then this is shots fired at us. Pretty sucks as much as the White Sox. I wouldn't go that far.
Just so the viewers are aware, the White Sox do play at the same time on the West Coast.
Yeah, so it's gonna be locked in dual screen. My score prediction, taking the Boilers, obviously, as I always do. I'm gonna say 28-24. Player of the game, Hudson Card. It's an easy one. Green. I need him.
Neil and Green back yet? Going to be back for this game.
So Walter sent his presser yesterday that Green, as of they weren't on the depth chart, but he did say he's close. He's running on grass. He says he's really close. He goes, I wouldn't rule him out this week just yet. Granted, that was yesterday. CJ Smith, it's feeling like a Rondale Moore situation from 2020 or 2019, whenever the hell that was, where it's because he literally said when he's ready, he'll play. I'm just like
2019.
Yeah. I'm like, okay. Boilers 2024, Hudson Card, player of the game, spicy take. Hold Oregon State to under 100 yards rushing. Why not?
Man, our takes are way different.
Got a little yin and yang in this episode. Let's look at some, if there's any national games that are worth picking before we get out of here.
There's a couple decent matchups this weekend.
Let's see here. Yeah, ranked Utah travels down to Oklahoma State, number 14 Oklahoma State. Utah's 2-point favorite.
Give me the Cowboys.
I was going to take the Utes in that one.
Cam Rising's been around too long, in my opinion.
Yeah. Every Purdue fan's second favorite team, Tennessee Volunteers, travel down to Oklahoma. Number six, Tennessee travels down to 15, Oklahoma. Tennessee's favored by 7. I think Tennessee whips them. This team is legit. I hate it. Nico is incredible. Their quarterback. It's cool because this is actually Heupel's alma mater, Oklahoma. But yeah, I think Tennessee puts a hurting on them. That's kind of about it.
I have a few more games we'll go through. This one kind of stands out to me as I think we all have a choice we want to win, but Georgia Tech travels up to Louisville.
I knew it. Louisville 10.5-point favorites.
This is the pre-ultimate matchup because Louisville will play Notre Dame next week.
Okay, that's good context to know. Man, if Florida State didn't suck so much, I'd probably be tempted to take Georgia Tech because after that, their week zero win, but that kind of shows that just Florida State's just a dumpster fire. Give me Louisville.
What big or they cover?
They cover.
So I will go to the next matchup where I kind of want to lead this. Miami of Ohio, so Oxford, Ohio. Yep. For those folks.
And Blaine Gabbert's brother, quarterback.
Yes. Travel up to South Bend. So Notre Dame gets to play another MAC school.
Yep. I think Miami, Ohio was projected to win the MAC coming into the year. They are 0-2. They have lost at Northwestern and lost to Cincinnati. Notre Dame's favored by 28. I think Notre Dame right around that 28, maybe like I think between 24 and 30 they win. So I think they're not gonna take MAC school lightly again.
No, they won't. Then that leads into next week's matchup, rank Louisville, more than likely rank Louisville versus rank Notre Dame. That game is exclusively on Peacock next week.
Oh really?
Yep, it's exclusively on Peacock. I'll be honest. I think Brom's going to have something to say up there, and I think Louisville next week is going to get that thing done.
I'll preemptively pick Notre Dame, but I guess I'll see after this weekend.
you have another show next week, but I think that's going to definitely be one of the most interesting matchups next week.
So Lynch lock is Louisville goes into South Bend and takes it to Notre Dame, something that Brom could not do in 2021.
No, and I think Brom's is a little chapped that they're not being considered for ACC when they were in the ACC title game right last year.
Yeah,
definitely fueling that program is motivation. I think that they're probably going to make their way back to Charlotte and be playing for another title this year. I know that's hard to stomach, but
yeah.
But folks, he's happy. He's home.
He is. He's home. Yep.
He put us in a better situation than we were.
We all would have done the same. Before we get out of here, I want to thank our other sponsor. That is The Shop. I'm wearing a pretty basketball one. I did that intentionally because I did not want to wear a football shirt tonight. The shop located, they got three locations in Indy, one in Carmel, one in Broad Ripple, one in downtown Indy. They've been making shirts since 2011. Incredible shirts, super comfortable. Do you own any shop shirts, Lynch?
No, I don't.
Well, have I got a deal for you, my friend? Because if you go to the shop, indy.com, use promo code breakdown, you get 25% off your entire order. And also, it's like they're Purdue owned. It's awesome. Great people. They make great stuff. They make shirts for quite literally almost all the major universities in the state of Indiana, minus the team that put a whooping on Purdue on Saturday. They even make shirts for Ohio State now. They do a ton with the Indy 500. They do a ton. I could be corrected if I'm wrong, but I think they are like the official shirt for the Indianapolis Indians. really high quality stuff. They make mugs, drinkware, like all things like Indiana, whether it's, you know, Indiana parks, cultural, you know, pop culture references for Indiana. It's awesome. They've got an Indiana State Larry Bird shirt that I've been wanting to buy for years and just haven't yet. Looks pretty sweet. But if you go to shopindy.com, use promo code breakdown, you get 25% off your entire order. Any final closing thoughts, Lynch? I appreciate you hopping on for this joyous episode that we had to go through this week. Any final thoughts, whether it's football, anything, basketball, if you want to rattle about the White Sox, I'll hop off and let you finish. I'm just kidding.
No, only one closing thought. I know everyone's mind was going towards basketball season upcoming. There will be a movie recapping the 2023 season. I think it's going to be shown at Mackey.
Yes, the Friday before homecoming.
Okay.
It's free, but you have to register online for tickets in order to get access so they don't have, you know, 20,000 people trying to show up. yeah, the Boiler Ball tweeted that out earlier today. It is free admittance, but you have to like register online to get a spot, to reserve your spot. I think it's in the evening on Friday. I won't be able to make it up there. I'm going to the game, but I won't be up there on Friday. No basketball's coming in, be here before we know it. It's exciting. Looking forward to it. But I'm not ready to give up on this football season yet. That was some of the Tanner and I were talking about in our group chat with our other co-host, Andrew Riley, who couldn't make it tonight, which for something we forgot to mention last week. I hate that I'm doing it now, an hour and 6 minutes of the pod, but congrats to Andrew and his wife for the birth of another beautiful baby boy that they had a couple weeks ago. Something we did forgot to shout out last week. So congrats to Andrew and his wife, Izzy. So he's been a little busy playing double dad duty. But yeah, we were cute. Like Andrew made a comment about basketball season. It's like, I don't want to do that again. I did that too much with Hazel and I hated it. Cause I love football. Cause it's such a fleeting season, even though it feels like a long season, but it just also feels like it's over before we know it. And I don't want to give up before September ends. Which Tanner's just doing tomorrow night. So shout out to Tanner. Go ahead, that's what he's out in Arizona for.
The only other thing is just an announcement of dates for Purdue IU came out this week as well.
Was it official?
Yeah.
Was it official? I guess I haven't seen it from both sides, but yeah, this is the first time since 2018 that Purdue will play IU at Mackey first. And then make the return trip to Bloomington later in the season. I think it's one's in January, one's in February. I don't remember the exact dates. Little bummed about that. I liked having IU playing IU second at Mackey. But yeah, it is what it is.
Well, to make a break with your foot, Mr. Mike Woods.
Yeah.
Yeah. So but those are the only basketball news. I mean, again, we enjoy football when it's here. We can start thinking about it if things go off the rails this weekend.
Yeah.
Hopefully my prediction doesn't come correct, but I'm definitely a realist.
Yeah, that's fair. We like all takes on this podcast. But appreciate everybody tuning in. I know it's not the most joyous thing to listen to after a loss. We appreciate those who did tune in. Appreciate the comments. Like us on Facebook. This is, like I said, we stream every week on our Facebook, Twitter, or not Twitter anymore because Twitter wants us to pay for it. Facebook, YouTube, and Twitch. We're back on Twitch. Yeah, appreciate everybody listening, and we'll see you next time. Until then, boil up, hammer down.
What up?
Probably end it.